Hello, I'm Valerie Saunderson from the Global News Podcast. With the World Cup now underway, we thought you'd enjoy hearing from another BBC World Service podcast, More Than the Score. All through the tournament, they'll be telling stories of the new teams, standout stars, trends and fandoms changing the game in ways the stats simply don't show. In this episode, they're asking if any of the 10 African nations in this year's tournament could win it all. You can listen to the whole episode right here, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Lee James, and this is More Than the Score, the BBC World Service podcast that's looking at the stories beyond the score sheets at the FIFA Men's World Cup. Half a century on from Pelé's infamous prophecy that an African nation will win the World Cup before the year 2000, could this finally be the tournament where the continent delivers its maiden global title? Cameroon's run to the 1990 quarterfinal was the first of Africa's significant achievements, emulated by Senegal in 2002 and Ghana in 2010, and then surpassed by Morocco at the last tournament in Qatar in 2022, when they produced the watershed moment, reaching the semi-finals. Now a record 10 African nations will compete at these World Cup finals. Could one of those nations deliver Africa's first World Cup? Well, the Democratic Republic of Congo are represented for only the second time in their history, and their former captain, Gabriel Zakwani, is with us, along with the former Sierra Leone captain and Premier League defender, Stephen Colker. Hello to you both.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Lee.
Welcome, both of you. This is a specially extended edition of the More Than the Score podcast, because we've got so much to fit in. But first of all, Gabby, you must be tremendously proud that the Leopards are back on the world stage then, playing at their first finals for over 50 years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm absolutely buzzing. It's still taking time to sink in. You know, all the preparation has gone for this over the last 4 years. I would say we've really took 100% in focus in getting to the World Cup, and sort of is a dream realised, but we're not there just to make up the numbers. So we're there to compete, and the hard work really starts now.
Stephen, you played in World Cup qualifiers for Sierra Leone. You know that Africa's qualification process for the tournament has arguably been the most brutal in world football. Strong teams often missed out on the global showpiece. How important now we've got 10 teams then representing the continent at the finals?
Yeah, such a good opportunity for African football to really go and showcase what they've got. They've got so much individual talent. And I think what we're seeing now are teams really well prepared by their coaches. I think we're seeing not just the individual talent now, I think we're now seeing a collective unit. And, you know, Morocco set the standard in the last World Cup, and I'm really excited to see what the teams can do this year. I think that there may be one or two surprises in there.
And great opportunities for all. But Stephen, for a team like Cape Verde making their debut, they'll be the 14th African nation to have played at the World Cup finals. It is special, isn't it, for players and for everyone connected to the country?
It's a fairy tale, honestly. Like, when I look at it, I'm a little bit jealous, in all honesty, at what they've managed to achieve. It's such a small country, but they've managed to recruit really well. They've got a team together there. Like I said, it's a team that plays collectively. They've got, of course, individual talent, but it's how they play collectively that has brought them the success. It's really, really exciting for Cape Verde. I think for all of African football, I think everyone has a soft spot for them. You know, of course, you know, Gabby was saying he's rooting for DR Congo, but I think if you were to choose a second team, I think Cape Verde's the one, because there is a real soft spot for them amongst us Africans.
Yeah, if you're picking a second team, perhaps Cape Verde will see what their prospects are like a little later then. Now, it is difficult to win a World Cup. Only 8 nations have managed to do it, representing only 2 continents. So Africa is not alone in seeking this first continental winner. Historically, there just weren't sufficient opportunities to qualify. That said, though, what do you both believe has historically held back teams from Africa then? Gabby, first of all.
I think the infrastructure, I think, is the first part. I think there's not really been too much focus on it. Morocco have gone above and beyond in Africa to make sure they've got the infrastructure for the men's, the women, everyone involved, and to make sure. And we've seen the effects of that at the last World Cup, you know, where they actually did really well. They went really deep into the World Cup. So I think that shows that if everyone really, with the funding, focuses on the football, it could really then level the playing field. But I just think that's been the difference. And Morocco are showing that it's possible to start bridging that gap when you start really investing in football in your country.
So that's putting the money in then, Gabby, to get better facilities, better pitches to train on, everything that comes with that.
Yeah, everything that comes with that. I mean, with the DRC, we've used their facilities as well. We haven't got that level of facility. So when we have training camps, there's been times where we've gone to Morocco and used their facilities. And it is incredible. You know, it's not too far from what you see with the England team up in Derby, having that facility and with the women's team and everyone involved, the hotels, they've got everything that you can need as a professional footballer. So I think seeing that in Morocco and other countries using their base to do their training camp just shows you how far they've gone. And then their result in the World Cup tells you exactly what it can do to a nation.
Stephen, you represented England at younger age group levels before switching allegiances to Sierra Leone. What are your observations then on that then and the challenges that players can face when representing international football teams in Africa?
Gabby's 100% hit the nail on the head. Infrastructure has been the biggest, I think, pullback really for a lot of African nations. I certainly experienced that with Sierra Leone, switching allegiances from England where everything's done for you to then go into Sierra Leone. Listen, they've made a lot of progress in recent years, as have a lot of the countries. I would add to what Gabby mentioned there would be, as part of the infrastructure, is the travel. That's been a big, big issue across African football for a long time. The travel, how you prepare for the game is massive. If you're getting on flights, 3-4 indirect flights, traveling 20, 24 hours at a time, sleeping at airports, and then having to play a day or two later, of course, that's naturally going to give the opposition an advantage. I think closing the gap on that, you know, you mentioned Morocco having top facilities, and you know, as part of Sierra Leone, we used to all the time go to Morocco and play there. Ivory Coast, now, off the back of AFCON, have now got the stadiums and the infrastructure there now where we often use their facilities. So there are other African nations building that. And the last thing I'd add is, if you look at Senegal, what they've done is they've built from the bottom up. You know, they've built with the youth teams, they've put a heavy focus into that. They've not just gone, right, okay, we're going to get a result magically through Sadio Mane. They've actually gone, right, let's build a team from scratch. And that's what they've done there. And I feel that they're reaping the rewards. You know, there's a lot of talk around Morocco, but I'm a big fan of Senegal. In my eyes, they're still the people's champions from the last AFCON. And I think that, you know, teams can learn from both Morocco and Senegal in terms of development.
So it's about putting resources in then. And sometimes those resources can be scarce. So it's about how you direct those funds in the right way then.
Absolutely. For me, it's about putting the money in the right hands to begin with and then making the right decisions about it. Of course, it's not always easy. People are going to make mistakes at the top, all the way from the top to the bottom. People are going to make that. And I think players are understanding of that. But let's make sure that when the money is there, that it is going to the right places. Another thing I'd add is recruitment. So a lot of what, you know, Cape Verde, we just spoke about, they were going to recruit players that are playing abroad that have, you know, some kind of connection to the country. Myself being a good example with Sierra Leone, my granddad was born there. And through that link, that was how I then represented the country. So I think recruitment's also been a big part in helping strengthen a lot of nations.
And Gabby, that's something that you're working with the Democratic Republic of Congo, working with those younger age group levels to try and ensure that the nation has the very best talent then from the diaspora of players from around the world, from the European-born players, perhaps with Congolese heritage.
Yeah, I mean, what with African countries, there's a lot of players who are playing in Europe, but then don't see the African country as their sort of their home, and they rather play for sort of the bigger nation in inverted commas. But I think when teams are starting to make it to the World Cup, for example, like the DRC this year with Cape Verde, it's easier to attract players from the European countries than to go back home and to start representing their country. So I think it's a mixture of so many things. I think infrastructure is a massive thing. I think recruitment is massive. And also you have to do well to get the players to believe in your vision as well. So I think teams starting to do better and going to World Cups and doing well in African Cup of Nations tournaments will encourage the younger generation to want to emulate those players. So I think it all goes hand in hand.
So they've got to have those role models, and that's what you're telling the players that you speak to try and encourage them to represent the Democratic Republic of Congo. They can see now that there is a pathway there.
Yeah, I mean, what before the pathway wasn't really there. You know, it was just a hope, and we can make it happen together. But now I think they can see the work that's been put in to now want to play at the biggest stage. Potentially, they can't play for England. They won't play for Belgium. They won't play for France. but they can still get to the World Cup and represent their country, which is massive. And the biggest example, I think, is Axel Tuanzebe. You know, he's gone through the system with the England team. I had a conversation with him, I think it's probably 4 years ago, and then he scores the goal to get us to the World Cup, you know. So that is the sort of fairy tale ending to it, and probably the story I'll use for the next player that I try and get into the country. So I think it's something that is obviously working, but I just think players need to believe in the vision. And that story there with Tuanzebe and Aaron Wan-Bissaka coming through and getting the country to the World Cup over the line, I think it can inspire the next generation.
You take all the credit for that, Gabby.
Yeah, you said it, not me.
Stephen, what encouraged you to make that switch then, having represented England and perhaps at one stage thought that was the dream, to play for England at full international level, and then represented Sierra Leone and went on to play at an Africa Cup of Nations?
Do you know what? Similar to the role that Gabby played, I had Carlton Cole on the phone to me. So Carlton Cole with Sierra Leone Heritage never actually represented the country, but strong connections there. Reached out and said, look, you know, my uncle's part of the committee there. They want to bring you in, and you're up for having a conversation. And I'm always someone that's open to having the conversation. I never know where that's going to lead to. But I felt after speaking with the coach, this feels like a really exciting challenge. It's something that came much later on in my career, and I kind of wish it came earlier on. But I can really relate to the stories there that Gabby's talking about. I'm finding it a little bit harder with Sierra Leone because there isn't that, you know, sort of dream of, look, the World Cup, look, even AFCON right now is a bit of a stretch. So it is really difficult, but I find it quite interesting that we're both kind of doing similar roles, but at different stages. So we're at that beginning stage, and I will now use the story of DR Congo and say, look, there is that success. It is possible over the road. It just takes, I think, one or two slightly bigger names, let's say, to make the decision to go. And then I think the rest will follow. And it's really, I think it's an exciting time for African football because it's very much on the rise and people are standing up and taking note.
Yeah, of course, there's so much talent, is there, Gabby, and that could be tapped into, that could represent African nations. The likes of Kylian Mbappe, of course, could have played on the continent. But it's about developing that talent. And we can't say there isn't that talent there that could have delivered a World Cup already. We've seen so many wonderful top African footballers, even this tournament, with the likes of Sadio Mane, Mohamed Salah, Riyad Mahrez, okay, towards the end of their careers, but certainly falling into that category where they've certainly delivered for their countries, Gabby.
Yeah, no, they have delivered for their countries, but I think it's always we're missing that final part still when it comes to the African sort of giants that are doing well when it comes to African football. But again, I think we just go back to the last tournament. I think Morocco did very well, and then now you've mentioned Sadio Mane, Senegal. For me, are probably the best team in Africa at this moment in time. You know, and if they can go that extra step, it would be great. But there's always, at this moment in time, there is something missing, and probably those points that we made earlier about infrastructure and to make sure that they are doing things correctly, just like the sort of the big European countries, would probably be the bit that they can bridge the gap. But at this moment in time, I think there's so much talent, and I think having 10 teams, there will be a surprise, or one of the African teams surely will go deep into the tournament.
Anything in the fact that the successes have come with homegrown coaches, Gabby, Walid Regragui with Morocco to the World Cup semi-finals, at recent Africa Cup of Nations, Amerssa Faye with Ivory Coast, Pap Diaw with Senegal, sort of validated that homegrown coaching model. I noticed only 4 of the 10 teams this time of local coaches, but can that make a real difference?
It can. I mean, it's someone that can resonate and someone that will be probably a bit more passionate because that's where they're from. And, they're a fan as well. So it does probably give them that extra 10% on the side. But I'm just still not sure if that makes the full difference, because at the end of the day, they have to be, you know, ready to manage at the big stage and to deal with the pressure. So it all comes with a lot of different attributes that you need as a manager. But I think that can make a difference, and it shows in terms of success. You can see with Morocco, with Senegal, with countries that have gone on and done well, that it can give them that extra 10% because they've got someone that really resonates with the country.
And what do you think, Stephen, Morocco's journey to the semi-finals has done? It shattered that quarter-final ceiling that had frustrated African ambition since Cameroon's run in 1990. So what has that done for expectations now that we have seen an African team really move from participant to contender?
Yeah, they've shown it's possible. you know, they've set a standard there. And I think that, you know, personally, I think Senegal will be the team this year that will come closest to the final, maybe even win it. Why not? Like, what? Why not? Like, there's this, like, oh, if we just get there, why not? It is possible. Of course, it's going to be difficult coming up against some great nations with great players who are very well organised. But I just want to mention the coaches that you've spoken about there. I'm actually a big fan of homegrown coaches. I think it's really important that the coaches do have the connection with the country. They do have the connection with the players. I mean, it's just my opinion. I mean, if you look where we're sat today in England, you've got a German manager who may well bring England the World Cup. It's a matter of opinion, but I do believe having someone who's been there, knows the country inside out, knows what it means. Because ultimately, when you get to that level and you know, you're there, you're competing on that stage, a lot of it is about the feeling. You know, what's the energy like within the dressing room? Of course, tactics play their part, but the biggest part when the players walk out on that pitch is how they're feeling collectively. And then the manager, for me, is the one who leads the way. And I'm really excited to see. I'm excited to see, of course, Salah probably at his, you know, last World Cup. I'm excited to see what Ivory Coast bring to the table. South Africa, who are my dark horse in AFCON. What can they do in the World Cup? I've always speak highly of South Africa. I'm waiting for that to come to fruition and to sit on this call and say, I told you, South Africa are a good team. But, you know, there's just so much to talk about, and it's a really exciting tournament ahead.
Yeah, we'll go through each of those teams shortly. I mean, just finally on the coaches, I suppose it depends what kind of project it is, Gabby, as well, whether that European coach has been at the country for a long period of time and has really built up that team, or whether, as we've seen in previous tournaments, you know, a big European name is just brought in for the World Cup finals. Carlos Queiroz has been appointed by Ghana for these World Cup finals at a very late stage and often perhaps hasn't had that connection.
Yeah, I mean, connection is always important. You know, we've tried the homegrown route before, where we had Ibenge, who did very well at sort of the African Cup of Nations, but always fell short of the World Cup stage. Then we brought in Sebastian de Sabre, who has that European connection, probably helps with the recruitment as well. And he has that African experience. And to me, he's French, but he seems like he's Congolese every time we have a conversation because he's so passionate about the DRC and spends a lot of his time in the DRC, even when there's no games, you know, watching players coming through and trying to build the infrastructure. So it is just about what they represent and what they want to do with the country. And if they are very invested, then they can be as crucial as someone who's homegrown.
And before we go through the teams this time around, can either of you honestly say that an African team has missed out? Perhaps, obviously, Morocco, having got to a semi-final, could well have gone on to win that tournament, but we've had some big shocks, Senegal beating France and their run in 2002, Cameroon in 1990 with Argentina. But can we honestly say that there's an African team that's missed out on a World Cup anywhere down the line, Stephen? What do you think?
Not in my opinion. I think at the end of the tournament, the best team wins. And I think that, you know, if they've fallen short, they've fallen short for a reason, whether that's the infrastructure that we've mentioned, whether that be the recruitment, whether that just be a bit bad luck. You always need a little bit of luck to win anything in football. You always need a little bit of luck. So, I mean, there's many factors as to why the African teams haven't yet won it. But have they been deserving of it? No, not in my opinion. Not yet. But hopefully this tournament will change that.
Gabby, Ghana will say a certain handball, of course, in 2010. And things could have gone very differently there for them. Exit at the quarterfinal stage. But has any really missed out?
Nah, I think I agree with Stephen there. I think none has missed out that you think they should have won the World Cup or anything to that. I think at this moment in time, the mindset of African football has just been they've done well, but just not quite good enough. You know, and Morocco's probably changed the landscape in thinking possibly, you know, you're one game away from winning a tournament now. So I think it's a bit open now. Teams are going there. They're going to be free. They're going to attack. And hopefully one can surprise us and hopefully even get to a final.
Well, Sunday Elise represented Nigeria at their first World Cup finals, played in the United States in 1994. They reached the round of 16. Does he think Africa can improve on Morocco's semi-final place in 2022?
Well, it's possible we can build on it. In fact, the eggshell has been broken now. Everybody knows that you can get that far. I think so. But the question I'm asking myself now is that the way the Moroccans played 4 years ago, it's certain if they play that same way now, they won't get that far. Because they played a tactically very, very cagey style and came out countering to win games, you know. But now, if you do that now, you're going to struggle. But for the African nations, I think there's so much. I am kind of like attristed because I'm very sad because Nigeria is not going. That's kind of like spoiled a lot of things for me personally. But if you look at it from a general point of view, there are so many interesting nations that I have had the honor and the pleasure of working on as an expert or as a commentator, that I've seen them play, that I'm looking forward to seeing them, how they can do on the world stage. But I think it should be great league.
Which of the African teams do you think then potentially has the best chance of success Sunday?
Lee, there are so many of them. I find Senegal extremely strong. Senegal is solid, really. Very, very solid. I find the Moroccans also solid. How they now cope with the change of manager, I don't know how that's going to affect them. I find those ones very, very solid. And also, I think that of all the nations that have really qualified for the major tournament, there are some that have worries for, especially those who have changing managers, who change managers. I'm really worried for those ones. And one team that I think might surprise people a bit might be Cape Verde, because just as they shocked the whole Africa to qualify, others might even find them to be, you know, surprising too.
And are we getting closer to, you know, having an African team win the World Cup, whether it's at this edition or, you know, in the next one or two? Do you think we will see an African team win a World Cup soon?
No, Lee, if there's something I want to see before God takes me to heaven or hell, I don't know which one he's sending me to. it would be great to see an African nation win this, because this is a competition, a tournament that we all love passionately in Africa. And whoever wins that, whoa, I wish them good luck, because they're going to enjoy it a lot.
That's the former Nigeria captain, Sunday Alise, the former Democratic Republic of Congo captain, Gabriel Zakwani, the former Sierra Leone captain and Premier League defender, Stephen Colker, are with us as we discuss when will an African nation win the World Cup. Now, in order of the FIFA world rankings at this tournament, we have Morocco ranked 8th, Senegal 14, then Algeria, Egypt, Ivory Coast, Tunisia, the DRC, South Africa, Cape Verde and Ghana. So which African nations do you think has the best chance of going deep into this tournament? Let's look through them then, starting with the finalists from the recent Africa Cup of Nations. I think it's easier to say the finalists because we're not exactly sure who the winners were. Senegal beat the host Morocco in the final back in January, that chaotic end to the game. Senegal's players walking off after their opponents were awarded that stoppage time penalty with a match goalless. They scored a winner in extra time, but the Confederation of African Football overturned that result and awarded Morocco the 3-0 victory. Senegal have appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So, I mean, actually on that, Gabby, is that a bit of a cloud hanging over these two teams? I mean, let's see if they meet at any stage, but, you know, could that have an impact at all on the World Cup?
Nah, I don't think so. I think we're... No, I don't know anyone who's taken it very seriously that Morocco has won. I think everyone does look at Senegal. That was Senegal's trophy. I think the Court of Arbitration, it'll be interesting to see what the outcome is. But I think Senegal, one thing about them, they're very efficient. They're very professional when it comes to getting the business done on the pitch. And I don't think that will be something that will overcloud or change in the way they prepare for this tournament.
And Morocco, they're in Group C, so they face Brazil. They've got a tough draw. That is their first game at the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. Then Haiti and Scotland, Stephen. So they've got to show, haven't they, that 2022 wasn't just a one-off. And as Sunday Alise was saying, they're under a new coach, Mohamed Ouabi. So lots to prove.
For sure. I think, you know, where Morocco are concerned, it'll be a battle between them and Scotland for the second place. I expect Brazil to top the group, Haiti, unfortunately, to finish on the bottom. And I believe it'll be between Scotland and Morocco for that second place. So you say they've got a tough group, but I'm looking at the groups here. What group would they want to fall in? You know, yes. If you look at some of the teams that are in there and some of the groups, I would say that's not a favourable group, but it's certainly a group where it's achievable for them to get out the group and get into the knockout stages.
Yes, perhaps once they've got beyond the first game, and let's not write off that first game, it may be the best time to play Brazil first up, mind it. But I suppose beyond that, yes, you do think there's the opportunity there to get out the group. You'd expect them to.
I certainly would expect them to. I think that Scotland, although they're a great nation, they've done wonderful things under Steve Clarke. I do think that they often fall short when it comes to the big tournaments. This could be their year, but I expect Morocco to stand in their way. The first game against Brazil, I mean, look, Brazil haven't been fantastic. You know, that there's been a lot of talk around. Of course, they've got Carlo Ancelotti in there now, who's just the don of all managers. But if we're being honest, Brazil, and not to say Brazil that we saw 15, 20 years ago. So it is a game that is possible to win. But if I'm sitting in Morocco's camp, if I'm one of the coaches there, I'd be going, right, we aim to win it. Of course, you aim to win the group. But second place is very achievable.
And just to make everyone aware, in this enlarged 48-team World Cup finals, the top two from each of the 12 groups progresses, and the eight best third-place teams also make it through to a round of 32. So more opportunities. Senegal, Gary, were unbeaten in qualifying, made that really strong statement against England, becoming the first African side to beat them 3-1 at Wembley last June. Packed with talent. If we look at the likes of Nicholas Jackson, who's been on loan at Bayern Munich from Chelsea, Ismail Assar, you know, creative players there. What is going to hold them back, if anything, do you think, in this tournament?
Yeah, I don't think much. I think they're a side that have been building. They're a very mature side as well, have leaders in the team. They don't rarely get anything wrong, always have to do exactly what they have to do to get through. You know, I mean, we had them in our group for qualifying for the World Cup, and we barely dropped any points, but they just got the extra point to make sure that they got the result and got through, where we had to go through the whole playoff system and the long way round to the World Cup. But it was a nearly perfect World Cup qualifying performance by us, but they still managed to do just a little bit more. And they just seem to always have a result for whatever you've got. They can always do a little bit more. And I expect them to do really well. I think they've shown that they are a side who's developing, and now they are a side to really be capable of performing really well.
We'll look at their group after we've heard from the Senegal and Everton forward. Here is Illiman Ndiaye.
Since I was young, I've always wanted to represent Senegal. And then obviously when I was 10, 11, 12, I went to Senegal for a year to see my family, you know, to see the culture and everything in Senegal. And from then on, like, it was like, right, that makes my decision easier. And yeah, I've never changed it or the bag or anything like that. It's always been Senegal. I recommend, you know, if you're African, go and represent your African country. It's the best thing you ever do. We never fear anyone. I think we've seen it in the past when we played England, when we played Brazil. You know, we focus on ourselves and we win games. So yeah, I don't think it matters who we're playing against. It just matters if we turn up on the day or not. And then obviously, like, we don't go to a competition if it's not to win it. You know, I wouldn't even bother packing my suitcase and traveling to the World Cup if it's not to win it. I don't play these tournaments to just be a tourist, or, you know, I just play. We play these tournaments to win it. And yeah, what Morocco did in the last World Cup should give all these African teams an inspiration, and, you know, they did it. Like, why can't we do it? They did a brilliant competition that year. And yeah, we need to go into that tournament to be very confident and try and, you know, focus on ourselves and, like I said, go as far as we can in the World Cup and maybe win it.
And it's Illiman Ndiaye of Senegal, certainly aiming for a World Cup win. And talking about his reasons for choosing to represent them, born in France. In fact, France's influence on this World Cup is staggering. Nearly 100 players born in France are going to feature in the finals, 75 of them representing other nations. That means around 8% of every player at the tournament was born in France. But Illiman Ndiaye representing Senegal, they are, I think, Stephen, in a tough group then. Formidable sides in France and Norway, potentially tricky game against Iraq. And it starts with a repeat of that shock 2002 opener against the French. Then they've got to have to stop the goal machine, Erling Haaland. So lots of work for them.
Yeah, this is a tough group. I would say that this is probably tougher than Morocco's group to face France. You'd expect France in this group to top it. As you mentioned there, Norway, you've got Erling Haaland, you've got Martin Odegaard off the back of winning the Premier League there. They're a strong nation. Of course, if Senegal were able to keep Erling Haaland quiet, then there's a big possibility that they'll be able to get the points from that game. But it's certainly a tough group. Senegal, I believe, are the strongest African nation in the tournament, but they've got the toughest job of getting out of the group. Thankfully, as you mentioned, they're the third best place. I think will give them a little bit of comfort knowing that, okay, if we aren't able to finish first or second, the third place should certainly be theirs.
Yeah, and if they are to win the World Cup, though, I haven't plotted it all the way through, Gabby. There's a lot to get through. There's a lot of detail in the draw, but it would obviously potentially mean a harder match in the round of 32. So if we're talking about World Cup winners, does Senegal have to be in the top two? Do they have to be looking to top the group even?
Yeah, I think that's the aim. You know, you have to. I can't see Senegal going into this group and hoping to scrape through the group. I think they've shown that they can compete with the best, and they will go in there with no fear. I think they're capable of topping the group. Also, you know, they've caused upsets in the past, but now they've shown they can compete with the top nations. They have top players. They've been building for a few years now. I would say, yes, they are probably the strongest in terms of squad in African football at this moment in time. And they're going in there, to be honest, to win. So for me, I think they would have to come in the top two to give themselves a chance to go as deep into the tournament as possible.
So Morocco and Senegal then, perhaps Africa's best hopes. But let's continue down the FIFA rankings, where Algeria are in Group J. Just to say, all the African nations are in different groups, which is how the draw was made. So Algeria up against the reigning champions Argentina, also Austria and Jordan, capable of making it difficult. I think it's safe to say, Stephen, for any opponent there, technical attackers, we mentioned Riyad Mahrez continuing to bring that creativity and his experience.
Yeah, for sure. He'll be the leader. He's the biggest name on the team sheet there. When you think of Algeria, Mahrez certainly comes to mind. I think it's another, tough group. I could say that about every single group, right? It's a World Cup. You don't get to the World Cup and then face easy teams. The idea is that you're facing the best teams in the world. So, Algeria are going to have to compete against Austria for that second place. Jordan are no mugs. That will certainly be a tough game as well. So it is another really tough one. Can they beat the reigning champions? I think that might be a step too far. But of course, as I said, they've got a second place to aim for and the third place if that fails.
And do Egypt fall into the same category, Gabby? They're in Group G with Belgium, Iran and New Zealand, in the sense that it's now or never really for Egypt and Mohamed Salah, isn't it? Can they get beyond the group stage for the first time?
Yeah, I'm looking at that and I think they can. I think it is sort of now or never, because it's probably Mohamed Salah's last World Cup. And for me, I think he will be looking to sort of go out on a high as well. At the world stage, he seems to always perform when there's something on the line. And I'm looking at that group and I think they will get through that group. They usually are very hyped up before tournaments and then they sort of fail to deliver. But I think this time, I think he's got a big point to prove. It didn't quite have the season he wanted to have at Liverpool. And I feel that this is him to show the world that he's still got what it takes. And I think looking at the group, they certainly have the ammunition to go through.
We'll get your predictions, just to warn both of you, that is to come. Ivory Coast in Group E, they have Germany, Ecuador and Curaçao, the smallest nation to ever qualify for a World Cup. Now, it feels quite a balanced group. It feels like one where Ivory Coast even could make progress here. They've got the physicality, they've got the technical qualities, though. Players like Ahmed Diallo could really be a spark for them. What do you think they can achieve?
Yeah, I think Ivory Coast are such a strong nation. And for once, they're not the ones with the pressure on them. When it comes to AFCON, they're often deemed as one of the favourites and there's a lot of pressure piled on their shoulders. But I feel like they're quietly a dark horse, which seems strange to say for a country of Ivory Coast, its size and capacity. But it does feel that way. There's a lot of talk is around Senegal, a lot of talk is on Morocco. I think Ivory Coast could surprise a few. And looking at the group, again, you'd probably have Germany down there as favourites. Curaçao, I've watched quite a bit of their games as one of our players in Turkey is actually representing them. So I've seen a little bit of them. I would expect Ivory Coast to beat them. And then, of course, it's the battle then between them and Ecuador to see if they can get out of the group. But I'm quietly thinking that Ivory Coast will be the ones that do make it out of the group. And I'll give my prediction in a little bit.
Yeah, let's keep that back just for now. What about Tunisia, though, Gabby, in Group F with the Netherlands, Japan and Sweden? Now, they didn't exactly excel at the last Africa Cup of Nations earlier this year, so they've changed their coach. Sabri Lamouchi has come in. Could they get through, though? I mean, we are talking about the best third place teams as well having an opportunity. So what do you think about Tunisia?
Yeah, I think it's an uphill battle, I think, for them. I think they'll do well to get out of it. I think out of the countries I'm seeing that we've listed so far, they're probably the one I least expect to do as well as they possibly could, because I'm just not sure if they gelled in time and everything, the cohesion. They haven't done well of late. So it will just be really interesting to see how they've, you know, sort of come together as a team and if the coaches' methods have come out to the team. So I think they're the ones who will surprise me if they get out of the group.
Six teams down, four to go, including Ghana. And we're going to hear from the Ghana legend, Michael Essien, now. He played in the 2006 and 2014 World Cups for his nation, the former Chelsea midfielder in the English Premier League. And he's confident that this team can make progress.
I mean, we are expecting them to go past the group stage. I mean, it's going to be a very difficult one. They are in a very difficult group. I think they can do it. They should take it game by game and make sure they can win them and progress. They've assembled some great players there. And so, of course, hopefully they can take their disappointment from the last World Cup to kind of motivate them to go past the group stage. So yeah, that's what we are hoping for, and hopefully they can deliver.
Would you agree that Antoine Semenyo is going to be the player that stands out for Ghana? Is he the one people back home are putting their hopes on after the incredible season he's had?
Yeah, I believe so, because as you said, he's had a fantastic season. So yeah, he's going to be the one everyone will kind of look up to push the team, carry the team with him and push the team forward. Of course, we've lost Kudus, who is one of our most important players. But I think with the help from the others, they can still do a good job.
That's Ghana's Michael Essien with the BBC's Ian Williams. So Ghana then are in Group L. We're putting this down as a tough one, I think. England and Croatia and also Panama. And Gabby, as Michael was saying there, where they're without Mohamed Kudus, who is going to be a big loss for Ghana. A lot will depend on the firepower of Manchester City's Antoine Semenyo. And as we've already mentioned, led by a very experienced coach, former Portugal and Iran, Carlos Queiroz. But again, someone who's come in just on the eve of the tournament.
Yeah, again, I'm not sure how much impact that will have, but just being such a big name will probably give the players a boost. But losing a player like Kudus, especially when it's Ghana, they really depend on him. You know, anything good that happens going forward in previous matches, it's been all through Kudus. So I think, but you know, it's not a bad player to now depend on with Antoine Semenyo, with the season he's had. You know, from Bournemouth, he carried on at Manchester City, he carried on the same level of output. So I think they're going in, to be honest, they're going in probably fans not expecting the best because they haven't been in the best form. But I think that freedom and that lack of pressure could be a way to get the best out of Ghana.
Can it take a little time to adjust, Stephen, when you have chosen to represent your nation? Antoine Semenyo has chosen that with Ghana, but is someone who has grown up in England, been part of football teams here in England. Can it take a bit of adjustment when you're now on the international stage?
I think so. I feel that just adapting to more things off the pitch than on the pitch, you know, just the differences there. And there are quite a lot, as we mentioned earlier. Ghana is a big nation with a lot of money behind it. I'd expect them to be traveling, you know, to a good standard. I expect it to be good hotels, the preparation to be better. But it still will, of course, be a difference, certainly from Man City heading to Ghana. But he's a player that just takes everything in his stride. You know, I thought when he went to Man City in January, could it take him a little bit of time to adapt there? No, it didn't. He hit the ground running. And I expect him to do the same with Ghana. I just think there's a lot of weight on his shoulders. I think if I'm looking at Ghana and I'm just looking at, you know, recent form, I do struggle to think that Ghana will get out of the group. But, you know, here's the hope that they're my West African brothers. I'm hoping that Semenyo and the others can deliver.
And what about Cape Verde then in Group H with Spain, Uruguay and Saudi Arabia? Stephen, are you going for a surprise or two? They've got absolutely nothing to lose, have they, after qualifying for the World Cup for the first time?
I think it's a great place to be. Absolutely nothing to lose. No pressure on you. You just go there, enjoy it. Give everything that you've got, which I'm absolutely sure they will. They've given everything they've got to get to this stage. They're not going to rest up now. I think personally that's a team there that can get out of the group. Of course, it'll be tough, especially playing against Spain. It's going to be a real, real test for them, but an unbelievable experience. And I think that actually out of the let's say the slightly smaller nations, I would say they're the team for me that will go on and achieve something this World Cup.
And where you play your matches can make a big difference as well with the heat and the conditions that teams will experience, Gabby. Now, the Democratic Republic of Congo then in Group K, Portugal first up in Houston, then Colombia at altitude in Zapopan in Mexico, Uzbekistan, who are making their debut at the World Cup finals in Atlanta. What do you see as the big challenges there then?
I think in terms of when it's the weather, there's no challenge there. I think a lot of the Congolese players are used to the heat, especially playing in Congo is absolutely unbelievable when you play at the Stade de Martyr, our stadium, and it's just the heat there can literally take you out on your feet, but that you just perform there because of the crowd. But I'm looking at that. I think it's very doable, as we've mentioned that the group top three can go through. But I think you look at Portugal, a lot of people write us off for that game. But as I said, I don't think we're in there to just make up the numbers. We just had a friendly a couple of days ago against Denmark. And to me, on chances, we should have won the game. So it shows how far we've come. There's no fear in the Congo team. And I think that sort of element of surprise could be what undoes teams like Portugal against the DRC.
And just on the conditions, though, whilst it may help you, that is could be an advantage. You know, the athleticism, the pace, the physicality that you have in your side could disrupt those teams that you're facing. Yeah. And perhaps look for more possession.
Yeah, exactly. It can. And also the route that we've taken to get to the tournament. I mean, we had to play the playoff games in these conditions. So we've had sort of a rehearsal of it against Jamaica to get to the World Cup in these conditions as well. We had a friendly just before that, again, in these conditions. We're prepared for this. You know, it's sort of not too dissimilar from what's in Africa already. And we've had the long route of the playoffs to get used to this as well. So I think our players are ready in terms of condition. It's just that if we can adapt to the football and to the quality of a side like Portugal.
And for South Africa, Stephen, your tips again after the opening game against Mexico, now with South Korea and Czechia to come back in the World Cup for the first time since they hosted in 2010. Are your dark horses once more?
Yeah, I've got to stick with them. I'll be turning grey before they actually put it off. But no, I stick with them. I still think they're one of, if not the best footballing side that I faced in African football. And I think that it's just about time that they deliver. They, you know, they play good football. They've got a big advantage for South Africa is a lot of their players play at home in their country. They used to play with each other. They've got that familiarity amongst their squad. I think that South Africa, for me, will get out of the group. I'm going to put my neck on the line and say that. But of course, you go against South Korea, who are always really well organised. They work extremely hard. I played them back in the day in the Olympics, the 2012 Olympics, and just such a really well organised side. South Africa are going to have to be prepared for that. Mexico, again, who you'd expect to maybe top the group. And then Czechia, who are also a tough competition. So they're in a really tough group, South Africa. But I am expecting them to finally show what they're capable of.
This is the moment then, both of you. We've got 10 African nations. First of all, how many of these 10 are getting out of the group? Gabby, I know you're going to at least say one of them for the DRC. How many do you think, though?
Oh, I think out of the 10, I'm going for half of them. You know, I'm going for five. I think I can see the DRC getting through. And I don't think I'm allowed to say anything else. But I genuinely do believe DRC will get through. I think Senegal and Morocco will certainly get through. And I think, you know what, Cape Verde, I think are the dark horse because not many sides expect. I think that's the element of surprise will be telling. And I'm just undecided about Ghana and Ivory Coast, but I would say Ivory Coast will get through as well.
How many are you going for, Stephen, out of the 10 to get through the group stage?
I was going to say six, but I don't want to upset Gabby, so I'll go with seven. DRC in there. I think the three that are going to struggle for me are Tunisia. I think they will struggle this one. I do believe that Ghana will struggle, and I think that Algeria will struggle. So out of the 10 teams, I'm going to say those three may struggle the most.
And how far do you think an African team can go at this World Cup, Stephen? What are we looking at? Can it match a semi-final? Can it go even further?
I would love for it to happen. I really, really would. And as I've mentioned a couple of times, I do believe if there is going to be a team to do it, it'll be Senegal. I just think it might be a bit too much to ask when I'm looking at some of the teams. I think once I have now this in front of me and I'm looking at the teams, I'm saying, can Senegal go and beat the likes of Argentina, which you're going to have to beat at some point if you're looking to win the World Cup? Are they going to go and beat Portugal, etc.? So I don't know. I would say a semi-final would be my opinion, but I would love to be wrong and for one of them to go, not just to the final, but to go on and win it.
Well, Spain, Argentina, France, England are the seeded team to reach a semi-final, so someone has got to beat one of them along the way. It could be an African nation. Gabby, do you think? What's possible?
Yeah, I think I'd go again with Senegal. I just can't see past them when it comes to the African countries. And, they've proven they can beat England already, So they've got that sort of firepower and that balance in quality to get as far as they can. But it's just in terms of now, it's the World Cup. It's a totally different thing. It's the pressure of it as well to perform. First option has to be to get through the group, and then anything can happen in the one-off games, So I do see Senegal, Morocco being the obvious choices to get as far as possible. And a semi would be great, and then anything can happen.
And just finally then, we ask the question, when will an African nation win the World Cup? If not this time, when, Stephen?
It's coming. I truly believe it's coming. I think, the last 45 minutes of conversation reflects that. I think we're seeing growth. We're seeing the infrastructure building and building and building. We're seeing talented players now coming and choosing to play for the African nations. Semenyo being a great example of that. I think if it's not this year, I do think within the next two World Cups, we will see an African nation lift it.
Gabby?
Yeah, I go along with that. I would have said give another two World Cups and then to start catching up and bridging the gap in terms of just facilities and everything that goes with it. So I will say that this will open up a lot more. I think we saw Morocco the last time. Now I think there'll be two or three involved in getting as far as possible. And then you give it a couple more World Cups. I think once the infrastructure catches up, there can be an African team to win it.
We will see. Could it happen this time around in New Jersey for the final of the World Cup 2026? Stephen Colker, Gabriel Zakuani, thank you both very much.
Thank you. Absolutely.
And that's all from More Than The Score for today. Thanks to Gabriel Zakuani and Stephen Colker for joining us. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow and subscribe to More Than The Score. We also love hearing your thoughts on the stories we cover. You can email morethanthescore@bbc.co.uk or visit bbcworldservice.com/morethanthescore to find out how to contact us via WhatsApp. But until next time, from me, Lee James, it's goodbye for now.
Hello, it's Valerie Saunderson from the Global News Podcast again. I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. To hear more stories from the World Cup and beyond, search for More Than The Score wherever you get your BBC podcasts.